Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to We All Serve, a podcast series brought to you by Arizona Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. Today's show is about one Arizona employer who is earning national recognition for its support of its Guard and Reserve employees. I'm your co-host and moderator, Mike Phillips. I'd like to introduce our other co-host, Dan Irving, the Arizona Chairman for ESGR. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Mike. Looking forward to today.
Me too. Before introducing our guests, I'd like to once again thank Karen Nowicki and Phoenix Business Radio X for their ongoing support of this podcast series. We appreciate the opportunity to tell the ESGR story. Now on to our guests. It's my honor to introduce Prescott Fire Chief Dennis Light and Prescott Firefighter Lance Mills. They are joining us today via Zoom. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, guys.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, before we go on, I just want folks to know that the Prescott Fire recently are recipients of the Secretary of Defense Freedom Award, which is really the highest award that ESGR can give an employer who employs Guard Reserve members. And it was my honor to be up there, about 3-4 months ago now, when we presented that up there at the fire station. And again, that was a real honor for me to do that because it's a very prestigious award. And they give 15 out per year. And 5 go to large business, 5 go to small business. And then, of course, we've got the city government. And 5 go to them. So it really is a prestigious. There was like, I believe, 3,000. There was something like 3,600 applicants that were nominated for this. So it was it really is an honor to have you in this state doing what you do for our Guard and Reserve members that work for your fire station there and your fire department.
Chief Light, share with us a little bit about why Prescott stands out.
Well, I think a couple things. First and foremost, we get great support from our policymakers. Regretfully, Mayor Mangarelli can't join us today, but I feel very confident speaking on his behalf. You know, being the community that we are with the presence of not only active duty as well as Guard Reserve members. We're very heavily involved with having veterans in our community. So I think that kind of is a standout for us as a community. We're home to a very robust Veterans Administration services along with our own men and women that serve. And the city kind of almost bends over backwards to recognize our veterans and provide them with the means and mechanisms for them to continue their service when they're called upon active duty during their training weekends, and then try not to have too many gaps for their upward mobility upon their return or while they're gone, so they can still maintain their position as productive employees with the city.
It's a great community. Can you give us a rundown of a few of the programs the city has in place to support its employees who are members of the Guard and Reserve?
Well, I think first and foremost, there is an offset that each Guard member in the fall is provided towards their service. I believe, Lance, $2,500?
$2,500 a year, yes, sir.
$2,500 stipend once a year for those members. I think right at the moment, we're somewhere upwards of 9 to 12 city employees. And when you look at that from a percentage perspective, we have under 500 total employees. So that's a good percentage. And those come across all disciplines. That, along with the flexibility, I think, of those folks that are co-workers and peers to fill in the gaps when we have a member called to duty. I know in the case of Lance, you know, when you take a person out of the picture and deploy them, some of the folks back home still have work to do. And the city's pretty flexible in that and allowing Lance his time away along with the opportunity to use his skills that he obtains while he is gone when he comes back on the job. Those are kind of the benefits that I see from a chief executive's perspective. Maybe Lance could add into that as well.
Yes, sir. So I have a great community support. You know, I can't speak for all the departments because I only work for the fire department. I interact with some of my guard friends in the law enforcement side as well. And on top of everything that the city provides me, we just have a really solid group of employees here. And I had so much support. I had friends checking in on my family while I was out the whole time. Just, I never got asked anything other than what do you need? How can I help you do what I needed to do? You know, and service for me was kind of like an emotional thing. Like I felt a responsibility to the country to kind of go in and chip in my $2 into the pot, so to speak. And so I did that, and I'd never received anything other than support and camaraderie the whole way around, you know?
That's great to hear. I'm drawing a blank here. Let me go back to my notes. I apologize. question for Chief Light. Why does Prescott do this? You talked about the veteran and the military culture up there, but and a little bit about the benefits of the training that Lance brings back, for instance, to the city. But the cultural reasons, why does Prescott invest so much in the military members?
Well, I think as much as anything else is, it's... And again, I come from this from a public safety perspective, but it's service above self. I'm a Rotarian as well as a former service member, as well as in my role, a piece of the fabric within the Prescott community. And through that, it helps our collaboration with outside the city type folks. I apologize for the background noise, guys. Lance has to depart, and with that, we'll roll through and hopefully make the best of it, and I'll do Lance good, I hope.
Hey, thank you, Lance. Good luck and be safe.
Thanks.
For our audience, Firefighter Mills and Chief Light are doing this podcast from a fire station, and they just had a call roll in, and Firefighter Mills is on duty, so he's out doing something special for the community right now.
What I find with our military members is they get the general skill sets, which really makes them good ambassadors when speaking to our community members. They're able to speak both from a understanding of federal governance and Department of Defense, as well as at the local level and municipal government and those kind of auspices. So it really kind of brings in the whole person concept our community supports us, and we in turn return the favor by supporting the community. You know, tons and tons and tons of money is spent in municipal services. And by us allowing our folks to go and support at the national level, I think it aids everybody. And it is really the total force concept. Being a former military member myself, I understand the role the Guards and Reserve play. They're much more than, sarcastically put, weekend warriors. These are folks that are true professionals. And in Lance's case, what he does in the military is very similar to what he does here day in, day out, and supporting the Prescott community.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a little bit. I wanted to ask you to share a little bit about your military background and your service and how that led you to where you're at today.
Wow. It's a very interesting story, actually. If we have a few minutes, I'll kind of share. I actually went in just, as a young 19-year-old, I took a year off of high school, tried my luck at college. And I say luck because I kind of focus more on Party 101, perhaps, than English 101. And after about a year of that, I really had to find myself. And I just happened to be walking by a recruiter one day, and as most folks that have ever entered the service, you know, you're always young, impressionable, and being we have an all-volunteer force, they want folks that are good quality. When I entered, I kind of bypassed most of the other branches of service and went direct to the Air Force, primarily because both my mom and dad served in the Royal Canadian Air Force. My brother served in the U.S. Army. We still let him come to dinner every once in a while, but that's okay. And then, you know, I went in guaranteed job, guaranteed base as a missile mechanic with an assignment to Malmstrom, Montana. Well, long story short, I was 4 weeks into boot camp and the drill instructor called me into his office and it was revealed, no surprise, it was full disclosed, but I was born in Canada. And with that, you had to be a natural U.S. born citizen to serve in the Air Force specialty. So the drill instructor and the personnel staff worked with me, gave me a number of opportunities. I actually thought I was going into air conditioning or refrigeration. And at the end of boot camp, I found out my orders were to fire protection specialist school at Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois. And come this June 1st, that'll be 44 years ago. So something happened there that is a very telling story. And that is folks come into this profession because they want to give back to the community. They had an encounter with a fire service or an emergency medical services professional. In my case, I happened to put in the check the wrong box and I ended up in the fire service, but it's been very rewarding to me. I left, retired in 1994 and been at it for over four decades now. So it's kind of a fun story. At the same time, it allowed me to find myself and find a professional career path that I'm thankful I'm at the capstone of my career.
Yeah, you know, Chief, that's one thing. You mentioned a couple things that kind of hit a note with me is, you know, you really got your training and stuff in the Air Force and then took your training and went out and got a job, of course, with Prescott or wherever you started with. But you stayed in your original field of expertise, which was firefighting, right?
That is correct. I had a transitional year where I worked transitional year for 3 years. I worked for a short period with an Air Force contractor, but that was the marketability of my Air Force specialty was I pretty much by the time I finished my active duty career, probably a little too old to maybe start at the beginning. Plus, I probably had a little bit too much leadership experience. So I was actually able to hire into a municipal department as a battalion chief back in 1997, about 3 years after I retired.
Right. And, you know, and that's what I hear a lot too. You know, most people do that. They go in the service, they come out and they gravitate to a field that they're familiar with. They're very knowledgeable in that field and can fit right into the community, into the industry. But there's also those that go in the military, they come out, or they're in the military, join the Guard and Reserve, and they want to do something different. And so sometimes they'll look for jobs that are different than what they do on their weekend or when they're deployed. Do you have anybody there that's in that situation where they might be a reservist doing something different than firefighting, but then yet works for you as a firefighter.
Does you know, not at the present time. In my previous organization, also in Arizona, you know, we did have that experience where it was actually a former Marine, and for most and a guard type individual mobilization augmentee, I believe is what they were called at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was actually just a machine gunner for the Marine Corps. And not that there's a lot of work for machine gunners in the civilian world, thank goodness. But, you know, he got into the fire service primarily because he kind of gravitated to the paramilitary structure that the fire service brings. So, you know, he had the core understanding of chain of command, lines of authority, and the regiment that comes with being a military member. But conversely, you know, it's a little bit different in the sense that it's a little bit, I call it military light, as far as the organizational structure. But I think one of the things that really kind of has people gravitating from the military to a public safety or even other careers is kind of that structure. Most of the folks, they come out of the boot camps and those kind of things, and they're squared away. And so they look for jobs that are similar. Now, there is a faction out there that totally don't want anything to do with what they did in the military. I have many associates that the day they stepped out, they moved on and became something much different. I have a friend that did 24 years on active duty, stepped out and went into mining and those kind of things. So I think it just gives you a great core base for understanding authority. And when you're placed in a position of authority, exercising that authority appropriately to get the most out of people. And, you know, 90% of our work is people interaction. And I think the skill sets transcend across all disciplines. You know, a few years ago when I was kind of, you always kind of hit a point in your profession where it's like, well, am I tired? Am I burned out? And if I did something different, what would that be? And as I said earlier, I'm a Canadian born citizen. So, you know, I kind of gravitate to the thing called ice skates and hockey, and I'd love to coach hockey. But those kind of skills that I had in the military or Lance obtained through the military transcend not only into the fire service, but pretty much any profession.
Yeah, you mentioned Lance's experience in the military. Since he's out possibly literally fighting a fire, can you give us a little background on Lance and what he does for the city, and what was his military background?
Yeah, he is a firefighter. He's currently seeking promotion to fire engineer. And basically firefighting, we run about 60% emergency medical services calls. So with that, when we recruit folks, we require both firefighter credentials as well as emergency medical services credentials. Now, Lance, in his own peace of mind, and I think as he shared a little bit earlier, his desire to serve, he actually was onboarded with us for probably about 5 years, at which time he decided that he wanted to go and do something for his country. So he sought that out, went through boot camp, and there are some parallels. He's working primarily in the role as a combat medic and those kind of facets. But, you know, I think the one advantage he has is he can take the skills that he learns on the battlefield and then bring those back. And although we work under different medical type direction through a base hospital, he's able to kind of show, especially when it comes to trauma type injuries, the military approach. And, you know, as much as we've had what seems to be almost an endless war with the war for freedom, it's been one that a lot of medical advancements have taken place when it comes to trauma. And Lance is able to come back, explore those, and have an intelligent conversation with medical direction to allow us to maintain cutting edge practices in the field.
That's terrific. And like you said earlier, that experience that you gain in the military that you can bring back into a civilian environment is a lot of times priceless and literally life-saving. Lance was the guy that submitted the Freedom Award nomination for Prescott. And I know he's not here to talk about that, but what was your reaction when you learned that Prescott was being singled out for an award that really only goes to a handful of communities and businesses every year?
Well, as first off, as a fire chief and a former military member myself, it really wowed me to understand that one of our employees, first off, could find the time to put forth the nomination, because as you know, it's not an easy nomination to write. It's very structured. It's very much, it needs to have good explanations. It's really kind of all encompassing. And, you know, as much as the fire department was singled out, I think as we worked on some of the refinements with some input from Melissa Fosick over in our human resources, with our local kind of resident expert with Pat Kirkendall. It was one that, like, wow, you know, this is a big deal. And I'd be remiss if I didn't share the story. I actually had to go look and see what the Freedom Award was. And as I looked down some of the laundry list of previous, first off, award winners, I was just wowed. Prescott, you know, little old Prescott, you know, we're a community of about 42,000, yet you're put in a class with Coca-Cola, Chevron. To me, that just really made us stand out is, you know, we're small, we're compact, but at the same token, you know, we have a lot of good attributes that would put any community or any company to the test. And as I read the award, and you know, I'd be Secretary of Defense Esper, and you know, it's kind of unfortunate, you know, we didn't get to do the award presentation in person. But I think from a community perspective, I don't, you know, I look at it day in, day out, and it makes me wonder. I go, you know, is this the pinnacle? Is this kind of the self-actualization through Maslow's hierarchy? Because it's a big deal. And I didn't really know how big a deal it was till I did a little bit of my self-research and putting in the paperwork and those kind of things. That's only part of it. It's like everything else. It's significantly researched and peer-reviewed. And when you have that type of thing, and as was alluded to at the beginning of the show, you know, upwards of 3,000 plus applicants. So I'd have to say we're the cream of the crop.
Yeah. Hey, Chief Light, I just want to tell you, because I've done this now for, 4 years I've worked with the Freedom Award winners here in Arizona, and I can tell you that you're absolutely correct. And, you know, you can have all the numbers, you can put all the numbers together, but what really wins this award is over and above that an organization does. I mean, most organizations, they'll do what's required by law, but when you get an award as high and prestigious as this award, it takes a lot. And it's those human stories, about what you've done to for your members that were deployed, how you helped maybe the family and things like that. And you guys had some of those stories. And so it's those type of stories, because that's going above and beyond what you have to do. And it was obvious of most of these companies is there's like that family bond, right? You treat your folks as family, and you take care of them, and you know that they have a job to do, and the last thing you want them to do is worry about having a job or their family back here. And again, my hat's off to you, because this, I've read a lot of these because I always get to read them before we submit them, and I can tell you that it is an awful lot of work that goes into putting these things together. But it is those stories, and it's those things that you've done above and beyond the human interest side, and that's what wins them at the national level. That's what they look at.
Yeah, Dan, and just to offer a little bit of perspective on that too is during Lance's recent deployment, which wrapped up in the spring of 2020. One of the things that always seemed to stand out was the caring for his family, and you know, I have a Battalion Chief Scott Ludeman, with some level of prompting, I'd always ask him, hey, can you go, you know, continue to follow up? And I just had it out as a mind tickler, and he did it upon his own accord. But it was after that Lance returned that I actually found out that the team or the family here at the fire department went out and assembled a playground or a playset for Lance's wife while he was gone. You know, that other type of outreach, you know, whether it's just, especially a wife and being around children for any length of time, you know, you kind of like to have an adult to talk to every once in a while. And it's a little different nowadays. There's some Skyping and Zoom conferencing and various formats that soldiers, sailors, airmen, or Marine can convey back home. But, you know, that doesn't do anything for the needs at home. It can offer reassurance. So I think, by the folks going out and helping out with the family, giving Lance Swebb show an opportunity to talk to an adult. That always kind of nice kind of thing. Plus, I'd be remiss if I said, you know, I didn't get that when I was necessarily deployed on active duty. You know, I didn't live near a base. I didn't really have a secondary family short of that. And, you know, I spent about 6 months in the sandbox as well as a year deployed remote. And through that, that's one of the things I care about personally and really is in my heart, that we have to take care of these members, because if we don't, there's probably not a fallback or a backstop to us. So it's very important for us to maintain that connectivity.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, it's a win-win. It really is. It's a win for the employer, because they're getting someone with skill sets, with organization, with professionalism, leadership, all the qualities that they're really looking for out there. And at the same token, the employers support our nation, the readiness of our units, because if they didn't support our Guard and Reserve members, who's going to join the Guard and Reserve? Because their bread and butter is the employer. Their employer in their communities. That's what puts food on the table. That's what they support their family with. So when they deploy, just knowing that they've got the support of the employer means so much to them. And I've talked to a lot of Guard and Reserve members who deployed, and that's one thing that they've told me, that they've had good employers that are really supporting them out there. And so it's a win-win for both. You know, and a lot of times these our Guard and Reserve members bring to the organization a global perspective as well.
Right. Actually, Dan, Lance and I were talking about that just before we got started today. You know, as rough as we could have it here, and you know, and sometimes we go through rough patches in our personal lives and those kind of things. But as you go through those, you know, the global perspective can't be understated. You know, we're talking just a little bit about his time in Iraq. And with that, you know, when you see a disabled person wanting to join the military just so they have the benefit of health insurance over there in third world countries, that makes for an awkward conversation. You know, do we make things too easy on our members? By no means. I mean, going away from your family for a year with a young member in your family, you have to come back and re-assimilate back into that family unit, and things change. And, you know, as much as they stay the same at home, I think the military member changes a little bit, the family unit changes. So there's always this kind of a grace period for the reintroduction and creating those family bonds again. And the final point I'd share on that is, you know, and I guess this is a privilege that I have, as well as many members. You know, I look at law enforcement, I look at fire service, and I look at the armed forces. And unlike my father, who was in mining, my father, when he came back home, he had his social contacts and he had work associates. What I found in the armed forces, and most certainly in public safety as well, are work associates are normally our social contacts as well. And that goes without saying for some, but it's like, you know, you don't get to just take off the uniform and step away. You're always with family.
Chief Lake, talk a little bit about the importance of ESGR from your perspective. I know you're running a department. You mentioned that, you know, a fairly large percentage of the city's employees or Guard of Reserves members. How does ESGR fit into that quilt work, if you will?
I think they become the where the rubber hits the road. First off, making sure that employers take care of the Guard members, but more importantly, providing me a framework for what I need to do as the employer. It's very nice to have volumes and volumes of regulation. But, you know, nobody can memorize all the stuff that is the minimum requirements. You know, when we engage with ESGR, you know, Pat here locally, I've Pat and I have been on a first name basis since year one when his late father was the mayor. And, you know, kind of the nuances of what we're supposed to do, what we can do that is value added for our members. And you know, there's nothing that says the city has to do this or that. There's some very bare minimums. But in Prescott's case, you know, I came from another community in the state of Arizona. I don't ever remember them offering a $2,500 stipend a year, once a year, that's above and beyond the person's salary. And, you know, those are the kind of things that ESGR could encourage and suggest, but it takes the city to be responsible for it. But we also need the framework, and that's what ESGR provides, is the framework for the employer to follow the rules, add value to the employee relationship, and become a bridge between the employer and sometimes the armed forces themselves.
Yeah, Chief, that is, you know, that is spot on. And that's exactly what ESGR does. We provide those resources to the employers. We also provide resources and information to the reserve members, right? Because as with any laws, there's always responsibilities on both sides. So we make sure that our service members are up to speed on that because they're really ambassadors. We see our Guard and Reserve members as ambassadors to their when they're at their employer's work. They represent the Guard and Reserve. If you get a bad egg in there, businesses kind of get a sense that, well, we don't want any more Guard and Reserve members because this one's, well, a lot of times it's just a misunderstanding, and we're able to go in and we're able to educate both the member, the service member, and the employer. And once we do that, a lot of times it was just misunderstanding. So it wasn't a big deal. But we do have best practices that we share. You know, I know we have a lot of volunteers. We have 62 volunteers in the state of Arizona from different organizations, and we can share those best practices. For example, we've had some employers ask about veterans infinity groups, and as part of the veterans infinity groups, we've talked to them about Guard and Reserve members and adding Guard and Reserve members to that. As you know, most Guard and Reserve members today are veterans. But, you know, a lot of times they get forgotten because they're Guard and Reserve. And so Right. We make sure we're out there and we're educating them. And the other good thing about it is, you know, we're there to educate the HRs too. We want to make sure the HRs understand what those policies and the law says, and so that they don't get in trouble. We don't want that. We certainly... And then the big thing that we do, which is really good, and that's how you got your award. That's how you guys are recipients. The member, we give the members an opportunity. We give them a place where they can recommend their employer for awards. We have different levels of awards. That just, you know, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense Freedom Award is the top. That's the top we could give. That's as high as it goes. That's a national award. But we have state awards. We have lower awards that we can present to supervisors and things like that. So we provide that avenue, and it's very simple for service members to recognize their boss, recognize their employer. So we do that as well because we want to make sure that we're recognizing those employers that are out there supporting Guard and Reserve. And for those employers that... maybe don't have Guard and Reserve and like to know more about it, those are the organizations we like to go in and talk to because we can certainly explain it and maybe get them to come to one of the units, maybe go on a boss lift. We do boss lifts where we take employers up for a three-hour ride in a KC-135, do some in-flight refueling, also some Black Hawks, things like that. So there are things we do. We get them involved in the military, with the military commanders, so that they have a better understanding of what their employees are doing when they're not there and the skills that they bring back. So we do a lot of that. So I appreciate you bringing that up and bringing that point up. And So thank you for that.
Yeah, Dan, you know, and you touched on something there, and whether it be a military member or a city type employee, you know, we all subscribe to servant leadership. And, you know, through that, you know, I think the greater good is always the greater good. And that's community, whether it be the local community, whether it's out helping another community member that's suffering a wildfire, whether it's in an international environment trying to enhance democracies or other militarily necessities. I think that's the advantage and the leverage that you get by having a dual certified force member, and it's a force strengthener as well. When you swear allegiance, as every member of my department has done, as every member that's ever entered the military has done, you know, you swear to the Constitution and to uphold the Constitution. Those things are very important, and perhaps it's because I'm an immigrant, and I really value that oath of office, and I think that kind of puts the rubber stamp on not only what the employee does, what the employer does for the employee, and what our employees who serve in the Guard and Reserve do, as well as all the other armed forces as well.
Yeah, ESGR's motto is "We all serve." And we were talking to the Adjutant General in a previous podcast, and he talked about everybody pulls on the rope. You know, it does take everybody. You have different roles and responsibilities and places within the puzzle, but boy, every piece of that puzzle's really critical. And we appreciate what the Prescott Fire Department has done for its employees and for veterans, and for taking the time today to come out and talk with us a little bit. I'd like to wrap it up to kind of pick your brain about what the future looks like. We've just come through a really tough year. What do you see on the horizon for Prescott? Do you have any specific programs maybe in the work for supportive members of the Guard and Reserve?
Well, you know, I think that's a very open-ended question. Part of that is to see where we're, you know, we've probably the one thing, and this will be one that Lance hopefully has an opportunity to participate in, with the emphasis on points of dispensing for the current COVID vaccine. The Prescott Fire Department signed on with Arizona Department of Health Services, and at the national level with the Health and Human Services, to become a point of dispensing. Through that, you know, we've garnered, we have our own in-place paramedic service, but should there be a role, much like they filled, Lance filled a void for some of the Guard members deploying to the Navajo Nation. So I see that the current public health emergency being with us for a while. I'm fortunate I've had both the shots with no ill effect. I think we will obtain some sense of a new normalcy. Afraid masks are here for a long time. I don't think those are going to go away anytime soon. But I do believe that the citizen soldier, as well as the Prescott Fire Department, will be at the tip of the spear through that. And, you know, as we roll out the point of dispensing, it'll be kind of interesting whether I get to see Lance in his camouflage uniform or if he's in the Prescott blue and with the Maltese Cross uniform.
That's a good point. He's definitely wearing two hats in those roles. Thanks again, Chief Light. Really appreciate your time, and please pass along our thanks to Lance Mills and wish him best in his career, and thank him for nominating Prescott for the Freedom Award.
Yeah, we'll do that, Mike and Dan.
Hey, again, Chief Light, hey, I just want to say thanks again. I know you're very busy, and as we could see, Lance had to rush off, and all the radios were going off and everything. So, but I do appreciate you taking the time to do this, because it really meant a lot to I know it means a lot to our service members to hear this, and as well as the employers. I mean, I think employers sometimes they just don't know how to approach things. And I think you gave a pretty good indication of some things that can be done and how it's worked, and how, a little better understanding of what it takes to, be a recipient of the Secretary of Defense Freedom Award. So I want to thank you again, and again, congratulations for that prestigious award.
Very good, gentlemen. And just kind of in closing, we do have some plans, hopefully in the springtime, once things loosen up, to kind of recognize all our veterans here in the Prescott community. And as that gets closer, I'm sure ESGR will have a role to help us out with that. So thank you very much for your time. Nice speaking with you all today, Mike and Dan.
Thanks, Chief.